This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we're checking in with Plumas County about the latest on COVID-19 there, and we'll hear more about what's happening in California, from the statewide mask order to the most recent budget agreement. If you have questions for us, let us know on our message line, 433-9216, or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, the news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. More than 100 new cases of the coronavirus have been confirmed across the 11-county North State region, pushing the total caseload to 539. Large clusters of cases are appearing, especially in rural and sparsely populated Glenn and Tehama counties. At least 15 North State residents are currently hospitalized with COVID-19. Fatalities across the region remain at 10. If cases worsen enough, officials may have to reinstitute certain restrictions on activity. Each county's progress and ability to move ahead or drop back in the process of reopening is measured by a variety of factors, including the percentage of positive test results, hospital bed availability, and the number of new cases over the most recent 2 weeks. Governor Gavin Newsom's recent statewide mask order is meant to blunt the rise in new infections. According to data available Tuesday afternoon, Butte County was reporting 119 cases, Sutter County 118 cases, Shasta County 86, Glenn County 66, Tehama 55, Yuba County 43, Siskiyou 26, Colusa 11, Lassen 7, Plumas 6, and Trinity County 2. Statewide, the daily number of new infections rose sharply Monday as the California Department of Public Health announced 178,054 Californians have fallen ill with the coronavirus. The department announced 4,230 new infections, the second day in a row with more than 4,000. Infections are rising by 17.5% per week. Meanwhile, the department said the number of patients needing hospitalization or intensive care has risen slightly. Fatalities in the Golden State reached 5,515. That's up 8.3% from a week ago. The department attributed 426 deaths in the state over the past week to the virus. Trying to encourage mask use and downplaying political division, Governor Gavin Newsom released a public service announcement Monday featuring him and four recent predecessors, all imploring Californians to do their part.
COVID-19 is still spreading.
It didn't go away just because your mall is open at 50% capacity.
This isn't over.
It's up to all of us to fight it.
So do your part.
Don't let COVID win. Wear a mask.
The voices of former governors Jerry Brown, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Pete Wilson, and Gray Davis, along with Gavin Newsom. Getting back a portion of the deposit on cans and bottles will continue being an issue. On Monday, Newsom signed a waiver allowing shops to refuse in-store beverage container returns to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. In other news, Shasta County CAL FIRE investigators announced the arrest Tuesday of a 54-year-old old Shasta woman alleged to have caused a one-acre brush fire last Wednesday. Investigators say she admitted to discharging a flare gun during a dispute. The flare set neighboring vegetation alight. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Plumas County has seen very few cases since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. As of Tuesday, only 6 cases had been confirmed there. NSPR's Andre Bayek recently spoke with Lori Beatley, the county's public information officer for COVID-19, to ask what the low case numbers may mean and what officials hope to learn about the virus as mass testing is conducted in the county. Andre first asked what Plumas's low numbers tell health officials about how the virus is behaving there.
I'm not quite sure. We just started our mass testing a couple weeks ago, so we have increased our testing, of course. And thus far, we only have had 2 additional positive tests in our county.
With numbers so low, does it give health officials any understanding of whether there's community spread in Plumas County or perhaps that it hasn't reached there yet?
So at this point, point, we don't feel that there's any community spread. However, like anything else, it can change very quickly, which is why we continue to encourage people to follow the mitigating practices of face coverings and hand washings and social and physical distancing. So at this point, we don't see it here, the community spread, but with a lot of people coming into Plymouth County and a lot of residents traveling outside of Plymouth County, it can change, which is why the mass testing is important to help us know where we're at.
Let's pivot to those mass testing events. Plumas County has been conducting mass tests. One is scheduled, I believe, for Quincy on Wednesday. Can you share some information about what these events are and what their purpose is?
So at this time, we have been using a company called Verily that's been contracted with the state to conduct mass testing throughout various counties in the state. So we have utilized them. This is the third mass testing we've done. However, we found that we know that the state is not going to be able to continue this type of activity. They will not be able to sustain it. So Plymouth County has been working with our three healthcare facilities in Plymouth County. We've been working with Seneca Healthcare District, Eastern Plymouth Healthcare, as well as Plymouth Health Hospital District, PHD. So we've been working with those three to come up and to do mass testing in Plymouth County, and we will be hopefully starting that mid-July. I know Eastern Plymouth Healthcare, they just did a mass testing today in Portola, and that went very well.
It's my understanding that you may have been at that mass testing event. Can you maybe paint a picture of what it was like to be there and what was going on?
It was hot, that was for sure. So it was very warm today, but it went very well. It's kind of staggered out, so they registered people who wanted to be tested for free in the community or wherever they're from, but Eastern Plymouth Healthcare was willing to do that. At this point, they registered 40. This is their first mass testing, so they wanted to ensure that they could work the kinks out for future mass testings as well. And so it was a good event. There was a lot of people who were very thankful for it and wanted to be tested. And we're happy to have it. It was very easy. It was a drive-through, so no one had to get out of their vehicles. It was very safe. Everybody was wearing masks, even while being tested.
And regarding these types of mass testing events, who are these tests geared toward? Is it for people who aren't showing symptoms, or is it for people who both are and are not showing symptoms?
One, the mass testing tends to be a little bit more for asymptomatic. We do encourage those who do have symptoms to actually go to the healthcare provider, contact your healthcare provider, and then get a test. However, if somebody does have symptoms, then yes, they would test at the mass testing as well. But they're really just to get an idea. It's one of the surveillance tools that the state as well as the county uses to help gauge what the virus is doing in the community. And so that's why these mass testings are important for us.
Regarding testing in general, outside of these mass testing events, where can people get tested?
Here in Plymouth County, they can go contact their healthcare provider. So all three hospitals are doing testing and have been doing testing from the very beginning and have been testing aggressively. Plymouth Hospital District, they just did some targeted testing. So as well, and I know that they are looking at some mass testing, as we all are, so we're just finalizing that information because we want to bring the testing to other areas as well, not just Quincy. So we are looking at going to Chester, hopefully the second week of July. We'll be working with Seneca Healthcare District, and I know that Eastern Plumas Healthcare District will also be doing a mass testing in Gray Eagle next week.
You know, we've been working on a rural reporting project with CAP Radio that's currently focusing on Sierra and Plumas counties. One of the things we've heard from residents in Plumas is a concern of tourists coming to the area and possibly bringing COVID-19 with them. Is this a concern for public health? And are you seeing more tourists in the area as summer gets underway?
Yes, of course it's a concern. Anytime we have a lot of movement, that means the virus can have a lot of movement. So we are concerned, but we also understand that it's inevitable. And so that's why we are encouraging people who are coming from outside the community, as well as our own residents who are traveling outside the community and coming back, just to have safe practices. And so what we're asking is, again, face coverings. I know it's state mandated, but even before that, we did have our own health officer issue an order for face coverings while in public. Continuing the hand washing is very important, as well as maintaining physical distancing. And sometimes that can be very difficult, but those are one of the key ways in order to help slow the spread of COVID-19 in any community.
You mentioned these precautions that you're hoping people will take. Is there any enforcement aspect, perhaps, on any of these things like you mentioned?
At this time, we're just really trying to educate the public as well as businesses on the importance and the reason why these are being implemented at a state level as well as a local level. So at this time, we don't necessarily have the resources to enforce, especially the state-mandated face covering. So we are really just encouraging the public to be wise in their decisions and to think about others. It's uncomfortable to wear the face covering, especially as it gets hotter and if you're working. And we do understand that, the difficulties of it. So it's not that we don't understand, but we do understand that wearing face covering does make a difference in the spread of COVID-19.
Another issue that came up in our survey of Plumas County residents specifically was isolation. How does the challenge of isolation affect public health, and how is isolation, which many people are going through everywhere, different for rural communities?
For rural communities, I think we don't always have the resources that some of the urban and larger communities have. And therefore, so being 10 spread out, we don't have the public transportation. So it has affected our community, especially, I would say, you know, not just our elder, our high-risk population who are our seniors, but also our youth, in the fact that, you know, not having school, not having youth sports or other activities to be able to engage in has made a difference with them. And so as a public health, we are encouraged as well regarding the mental health of our community, not just the actual physical health of our community as well. So it has made a difference, and I know that some of our youth programs are trying to start up again and are trying to meet with our youth, whether it's through Zoom or on a much smaller level, in order to start engaging our youth in activities.
You mentioned some of these things like activities. What are some strategies and resources that might be available to youth or to parents to help keep people connected and engaged during this time?
I know that Behavior Health, Plumas County Behavior Health, has a really good website regarding some of those things that may be available, as well as the school district has been making a big effort in providing information to our parents and youth regarding what can and is available in our community as things start to open up. And so I know that they have been really engaging with the public.
Is there anything I didn't ask you about COVID-19 that you'd like to add or think I missed?
I guess for us, we just want to encourage everybody. The weather is nice. People are out and about, and that is great. But we don't want to forget that it is here. And one moment it could be, you know, we could be at 6. And then the next, you know, next week we could be double that. We don't know. It just depends on what it looks like and how the spread occurs. I know in other counties, not Plumas County, but in other counties, they've seen a significant rise in cases, which will impact our healthcare system. So I do want to encourage, whether people think COVID-19 is serious or not, this is something that will impact us. It's just a matter of when and how it will impact us. So I do encourage the public to continue to practice face coverings, even though whether you agree with them or not. When you're in public, it's respectful to do that, just as we do encourage people not to hug each other, handshakes, you know, things like that, the physical contact like that at this time, and to continue to frequent hand washing and physical distancing.
That was Lori Beatley, Public Information Officer for COVID-19 in Plumas County, speaking with NSPR's Andre Bayek. You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. More just ahead. Thank you.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from DuckDuckGo, a privacy company committed to raising the standard of trust online. Used by millions, they work to help people search privately and avoid trackers. DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. From PGIM. PGIM, the global investment management business of Prudential, provides perspectives for investors seeking to outlast today's uncertainty. Learn more at pgim.com. And from listeners like you who donate to this NPR station. Support for NPR comes from this station. And from Carbonite, for protecting files from data loss and other online threats when working from home or in the office. If something happens to the original, there's an extra copy in the cloud. More at carbonite.com. From Morgan Stanley, a proud sponsor of StoryCorps Connect, providing people with the ability to conduct a remote interview with loved ones at a distance, at StoryCorpsConnect.org. From C3, C3.ai software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at C3.ai. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. The number of new COVID-19 cases in California is rising. According to Johns Hopkins University, the state has more than 6,000 new confirmed cases since Monday morning. The sudden spike comes in the midst of increased testing and California Governor Gavin Newsom's face mask order for all indoor public places that was put in place last week. Also, an agreement on the 2020-2021 budget has recently been made by state lawmakers. We'll hear the latest on COVID-19 in the state and about the budget from Cap Radio's Nicole Nixon, who spoke on Tuesday with Cap Radio's host of Insight, Beth Ruyak. We'll start the conversation where Beth played a recent clip of Governor Newsom speaking about the new statewide mask order.
The reason we're doing this is simple. Wearing face coverings saves lives. It mitigates spread. I think it's remarkable, just looking at this slide itself. The impact that we have as individuals, even when we exhale, you can just see from this slide, just taking a deep breath and exhaling, droplets can go as far as 4.5 feet, coughs that infamous 6-foot number. But look at that sneeze. When we sneeze, it goes as far, droplets of 26 feet. It underscores the magnitude of opportunity we have as a state. I argue as a nation, to be more thoughtful, not only about ourselves, but about others when we are in public.
Even though you couldn't see the slide, by hearing those measurements and knowing that there's increasing research about masks and transmission of droplets, if you are interested, there are many ways to find more of this. And go to covid19.ca.gov, the statewide website, to be able to see some of the information the governor presented yesterday, including those slides. Now, he did say California's not into the second wave, not even out of the first wave, but he did not say much about the state budget agreement. Cap Radio's politics reporter Nicole Nixon is joining us to talk more about the big event yesterday. Hi, Nicole.
Good morning.
So let's hold on to the thought about the budget and stay with COVID-19 for a moment. The governor started out all about the battle, and very emphatically, he's getting a lot of pushback, though, across the state on the mask order.
Yeah, I noticed that he spent a good chunk, most of that presser, making the argument for why it's really important that people put on a mask and urge, you know, your friends and family to put it on, too, when you see them out in public. And it reminded me of when the stay-at-home order first came down, and he was really pushing the personal responsibility and using peer pressure to, make the argument that it's safer for everybody if you follow these rules, even though he is getting pushback from some of the more conservative and rural parts of the state about masks, just like as we saw a few months ago with that stay-at-home order.
He talked a lot about the jump in testing, as I mentioned, but he also talked about hospitalizations going up. And of course, those key numbers are the ICU cases and then the loss of life in the state. And it was almost like we had rolled back in time to the alerts and the sort of heightened messages that he was giving to us, Nicole, in maybe March and into mid-April.
Yeah, it reminded me of that too, actually. But the difference is now everything is open again and reopened. So there is this sort of mixed messaging that I think confuses a lot of people. He was asked about that. People are confused. The numbers are going up, but, you know, they're also able to go sit at a restaurant or go to a bar. So he gets asked about that. And, you know, when he's asked about the case numbers, he is quick to respond with, well, you know, we've been talking about this for weeks, but we expect more numbers as we do more testing. We expect more numbers as we reopen. So we're prepared for that as well, because we have hospital capacity that we've been building up, and we have testing capacity that we've been building up too.
So going back to the basics, those messages of wash your hands for 20 seconds with soapy water and take your temperature if you feel warm are coming out again. Stay home if you're sick. Keep the distance. Use the hand sanitizer. I think that stuff is going to keep cycling, because I have not heard any indication, have you, that the state really would intend to go back to a shutdown. Because of that word dimmer switch, it doesn't seem like we would go all the way back to that March move.
Yes. And, you know, I've been covering these pressers for the past few months, and he has said, you know, if we have to, we will go back. But even yesterday, he said, we don't intend to go back unless things get really bad. Well, we're seeing hospital cases go up. We're seeing case numbers go up. And he's still saying, we don't intend to go back. He does say that, you know, local health officials have the ability to go back if they want to. But that's something we're just not seeing now across the state.
Okay. He did not talk about the budget in his prepared remarks much. There were slight references. But then in the question answer period with the reporters, more came up. California is facing this $54 billion budget deficit. And this, of course, is directly related to the economic shutdown because of COVID-19. The legislature modified some of the cuts that the governor had originally proposed. But where's the detail?
Well, he dodged some of those questions about the budget, which I thought was interesting. I spoke to a few legislative sources who were not authorized to talk publicly about the deal, and they said that the budget agreement pretty closely resembles actually the budget bill that the legislature already passed. So keep in mind that that's their perspective, but that could be why Governor Newsom was reluctant to go too much into detail about the budget, because it could mean for him admitting that he made a lot of concessions on the cuts that he proposed in the May revision. So what I learned about the budget is that it keeps a lot of the same framework that the governor and the legislature already had. There's $6 to $7 billion in canceled spending that Newsom had proposed back in January. There's a big reliance on the rainy day fund. And there's the issue of federal funding, like you mentioned. This is something that lawmakers and the governor are really hoping for, about $14 billion in coronavirus relief funding from Congress. And some of their biggest differences in the negotiations is about what to do if that funding does not come and the state is left hanging. So Newsom had proposed $14 billion in cuts to education and health and social service programs. Lawmakers were not about that. They argued and fought really hard that it's important to keep those programs and that funding intact, especially during a pandemic. I mean, Newsom had proposed cuts to a program that helps keep seniors in their home, which is instead of having to go to nursing homes. And that's one of the most important things that could save lives during the pandemic. So instead of the cuts, I think they've settled on, if that federal funding does not come through, deferring spending to education, school districts, and community colleges for a year, basically giving those entities an IOU and paying that money early next year. But that puts school districts in a tough position. If they're not getting some state money, they may have to borrow or cut their own spending.
I think it's interesting to hear some of the different ways that the governor was responding or was not responding. So here's a little clip. This is just a kind of a mashup of some of his answers.
Yeah, we made compromises across the spectrum. We'll be putting out much more specific details in the coming hours and days, and certainly through the week. Well, there are tax breaks that will benefit small businesses. You'll get all these details. They'll be brought out in the next hours, as I said just a moment ago, days, and certainly over the course of the next week.
Okay, reporters were pretty frustrated with that. And what's he saying, that there's going to be another press conference where we have a budget chat?
Well, I don't know. He said, you know, wait and see. You'll have this detailed in hours. And I didn't get any details. I don't think that, you know, the bill is seeing changes. Haven't had a chance to look at it yet. But, you know, sometimes they send a summary of these things. You know, the May revise, I got a 200-page packet about everything that was in there. And nothing like that was sent to reporters yesterday. So had to do a lot of discussion on background about what was actually in this budget.
Well, he said there are tax breaks that will benefit small businesses. School districts have had to go ahead and work with the governor's proposed cuts. Many of them had to pass their budget for the next year already. He did say the whole discussion of the budget is not about disagreements, but that because they have a deal, it's about where agreement was found. And the truth is, Nicole, there's still time. There's still weeks, even into August, when some of this can be modified, when there's attention to these trailer bills. So there doesn't have to be the final say on a budget immediately, right?
Absolutely. And that's really important to keep in mind, that while there are these constitutional statutory deadlines that, you know, the legislature pass a budget by a certain day and the governor sign it by a certain day, they will absolutely be going back in to finesse and tweak some of these things in the coming months, especially because these tax deadlines got pushed from April to July. So the state still doesn't have a clear picture of what the revenues actually are. They'll get some numbers in August that kind of cement that picture. So late August, September is when I've been told that the legislature may be getting back together to run another fine-tooth comb through this budget and tweak it, depending on whether those revenues are better or worse than what's projected now, this $54 billion deficit.
Okay, and so we continue talking about health and talking about the economy and talking about socially how we're navigating it all. Thank you, Nicole. Good to talk to you today.
You too. Thanks.
That was CAP Radio's host of Insight, Beth Ruyak, speaking with CAP Radio's politics reporter, Nicole Nixon. And that is your program. As always, if you have any thoughts for us, leave them on our message line, 433-9216, or go to our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, Angel Haracha, Eric Rodeville, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. A special thanks to CAP Radio. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, news director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.